Hey, Random Chatter listeners. Welcome to the third edition of Random Chatter Interviews. In this episode, I sit down with co-host of the Chordcast, Joelle Alexander. Her personality shines through as we talk about her upbringing and her passions, including her love for music. Before we start, I want to express my gratitude for the awesome response we've gotten from listeners on the first two episodes of Random Chatter Interviews. I've had a lot of fun doing these and getting to know our crew better, and it sounds like you have too. There are more to come, but for now, here's Joelle. And we have Joelle with us tonight. How are you, Joelle?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing reasonably well.
Reasonably well? What does that even mean?
Reasonably well. Well, it's not really for me to explain. You're the you're the target of the interview here, so I really don't have to explain myself.
That's I'm not going to make it.
I mean, I do just kind of want to point out for everyone that, you know, a little while ago when we were communicating to coordinate this, you said, hey, I'm going to go for a run. I'll be back in an hour. And then like 7 minutes later, you messaged me and said, I'm back. So either you ran really fast or you just said, screw it, I'm done.
No, I'm the Flash.
You're the Flash. That's a pop culture reference, you know?
I think it's not Fantastic Four. That's embarrassing. No, I've never seen the movies, but I can only imagine. I can only imagine that the Flash would allude to someone who can run really fast.
Yes, as the name indicates, the Flash is very fast. That is a DC Comics reference.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Comic book has a TV show. Showed up in a movie. Yeah. It's all good.
I have this really cool running app, and so it'll choose a run to go on, and a lot of times it's like you run for a certain period or you run for a certain distance and then you walk for a time period and then you run for a distance, and so I never really know how long it's going to take, because some of them are like a 5K and then some of them you run 10 intervals of 220 yards, you know, so it's like it kind of depends. And so when I start, I'm always like, oh, I'll be an hour. And then sometimes it's like 3 hours later and I'm lying on the side of the road because I can't move. Or it's like 7 minutes later, we're good. So it was a 7-minute night, which is awesome.
All right. So fair enough. So you blame it on the app, which you're allowing to control your life. Interesting.
Wow. Interesting. All right. That took a turn.
So for folks who may not know, Joelle, you are the co-host on Chordcast, which is Random Chatter Network's music.
You, I am the primary host. I'm kidding.
You are,
I found that out 2 weeks ago. Let's not forget.
You are the primary host. Chris just shows up once in a while, and eats pepperoni rolls.
I can't. We can't talk about that.
No. Should we? Know? Okay, we won't talk about that.
I should have put that on the do not talk list. My soul left my body. I'm not the same person. I've been changed.
Yeah, yeah. Good times. Good times.
Oh, my God.
Will also be guesting probably by the time this comes out, somewhere around about there, maybe a little before, maybe a little after. Echo Base episode 101 will be coming out, and you will be guesting on Echo Base 101, which is Random Chatter's Star Wars podcast. And you are a Star Wars aficionado, are you not?
I know everything that anyone would ever need to know about Star Wars.
Okay, so either you're lying or you have an opinion of the measure of things that people should know about Star Wars.
No, true story. I don't know anything. I know absolutely nothing.
About Star Wars. Don't discount what you know about, you know, other things in life in general, but
yeah. Right. Yeah, Star Wars. No. So I'm terrified. And, thank you for reminding me 10 minutes ago that there will be a guest on the network while they're trying to handle me and conduct an interview with this guest. So that pretty much means that I'm going to ruin Random Chatter's street cred.
100%. No, not at all. Well, see, the way I understand it is that it's a Chordcast Echo Base crossover episode.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is really cool. And I'm unfortunately going to miss it. I'm going to be out of town, so I'm not going to be able to make it. So it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm definitely looking forward to listening in.
yeah, I'm excited. Like, yeah, it's going to be super cool because it's kind of one thing that I know a lot about, or I, at least I pretend I know a lot about, and one thing that I have absolutely no idea. So it'll be interesting to be set in that arena where it's like, talk about this thing that's also this other thing, you know, that you don't know anything about. So it'll just be, I'm really excited. I'm excited that y'all, gave me the opportunity to be on Echo Base. This is actually, the whole Echo Base guesting thing was something that we've talked about for a while.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pretty much since I stepped foot on the network, they were like, we have to have you on. And I could think of nothing worse. But
and it's because of your extensive Star Wars knowledge.
For those listening that are not on our Slack channel, we had a what I would say a Cordcast greatest moments. Mm-hmm.
Outtakes.
Outtakes. Yeah. I
Gag
don't know.
Reel.
Yeah, so
bonus content. and this folks is what you miss by not being in the Slack channel. A dollar a month donation to Patreon gets you into our Slack channel, and oh my gosh, is it worth it. You get to talk to the hosts, the staff, you get like this random bonus content stuff, you get to interface with other fans. It's a lot of fun. That's my commercial. I kind of commit to doing that commercial every time we do an episode of anything, but this was very relevant to the discussion because that's the stuff you miss out on at 7 o'clock this morning when I listened to this, what was it, 11 or 13 minutes of pre-episode content from your recording last night of Cordcast.
Post.
This was post? I thought this was pre.
The pepperoni roll was pre.
Okay,
Star
that's what
Wars
I listened
was
to.
Post.
Oh, what? Oh, okay, so they mashed it together then.
Yeah, because Greg just couldn't believe that I hadn't seen Star Wars, so I had to prove him wrong, of course. And so I told them what I know about Star Wars, and then it suddenly became the greatest thing ever.
I mean, you have some ideas. You knew who Chewbacca was, and you could physically describe him.
No,
you knew what a lightsaber was.
What Chewbacca was.
Well, at some point it was explained to you, but for the podcast, you knew.
No,
you didn't know that he was a Wookiee. That was something that threw you off, and then the bandolier and ammunition threw you off because then there was an exclamation about you wondering what Jedi were, and a certain F-word that was not fire truck that got thrown into the statement.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
I thought it was hilarious.
I just was a little bit offended, triggered, really, that someone was like, Joel thought the Death Star was a planet. It's round. It looks like a planet.
It's not a planet, and I guarantee you it is not a moon.
I just don't. I don't know anything.
We should have a random chatter network viewing of Star Wars films at some point. I would, if anything, Joelle, I would love just simply to get your commentary on watching. And it doesn't have to be all the films. Seriously. We'll just pick one film. And because, if you don't like it, I don't want to burden you with all of them. But if we can get you for an hour and a half-ish to watch one of the movies live. I think ideally we need a video stream of it.
Oh, no.
Just to get your reactions to the film. That would be priceless. We could actually probably sell that for like $10 Patreon donation. And we would like make mad money. Like we'd be millionaires. Or the network would be millionaires. We wouldn't because it doesn't go in our pockets.
You know, that is one of the reasons that I was scared to show up at Celebration, because someone on the Slack channel, I genuinely don't remember who, was like, not in a creepy, threatening way, even though it could be taken that way, but they were like, we're going to grab you and sit you down and make you watch all of the Star Wars. And I was like, ha, ha, great. You know, so like, I don't put it past you guys because you guys are so passionate and so like, just think that this, you know, it is really important and it's really like culturally important, and so I was very alarmed and worried that I would be forced to watch the Star Wars movies. So
no one would force you. I promise no one would force you. But you do have an appreciation for the music, though, right? I think a couple episodes of Cordcast ago, you and Chris were talking about some music selections within Star Wars, some of John Williams stuff, and you mentioned that you had some awareness of and some appreciation for that, right?
Yeah. What is her name? The girl? The new girl.
Ray.
Ray. It's her theme.
Yes. Yeah. Her beautiful, beautiful music.
Yeah. Super cool. Super cool. I loved it. It was dope. But that's all I've listened to. I would love to listen to more, but that's all I've dove into. Yeah. So I would highly suggest those listening. I'm going to do a second little plug here. Spend the dollar a month, and then you can hear me try to explain what I think Star Wars is about. And it'll be dope.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a good time. It's definitely worth it. 500%. So we have I think that's kind of a nice preamble to people who may not know Joelle. So we'll kind of, I think, dive into the nitty gritty, the meat and potatoes. What's your favorite food, Joelle?
Sushi.
We're gonna dive into the sushi of this interview. That is not a good analogy.
Tacos.
Really? There we go. We were just talking about tacos. We're gonna dive into the taco meat. That's seasoned, cheap, fatty taco meat.
Ooh, no. No, thank you.
Of fish tacos? You like fish tacos?
No, I don't like cooked fish. Sushi's my favorite food, but I get sick when I eat cooked fish. It's very strange. Don't ask me.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. That fun fact about Joelle.
It's real life, you know? This is where we're at.
Joelle, where in the world were you born?
You weren't kidding. We were going way back.
But we're going all the way back. We're jumping in a time machine. We are going backwards to the beginning of time. Well, the beginning of Joelle time.
Like, I started this earth and I'll finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was born in Bellevue, Washington, which is outside of Seattle. That's where I spawned from. And then we lived about 3 hours south of Seattle until I was about 7. And then we moved to the great state of Idaho when I was just about to turn 8.
3 hours south of Seattle. Is that still in Washington or in Oregon?
That's in Washington.
Okay.
Unless I just lied to you. One moment, please. Let me look this up. I may have just lied. I don't know where I grew up.
You don't know?
Oh, wow. I totally lied. It's only an hour. It's an hour south.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought it was 3. Whatever.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, so
time is kind of irrelevant,
especially when you're 7.
True, that's true. Well, because like when you're 7, and mom or dad says, "Oh, well, you have to wait until tomorrow to do this," that's like an eternity. That's like the hardest thing in the world.
Literally.
So you were born in Washington.
Moved to Idaho. Yep.
You grew up. For how long were you further south of Seattle?
From spawn till 7. So
until 7. Okay. So yeah, you started school there.
Yeah. Well, I was homeschooled my entire life. The first time I stepped foot in a classroom was when I was a senior in high school. And my mom said, "You have to go to the community college and take a math class because I can't send you to a university knowing that you don't know how to learn from a teacher." So, yeah, so I was homeschooled. My parents sent us to preschool, I think because they didn't want to deal with trying to teach us the alphabet. So my brother and I both went to preschool. And then it was home life for me. Then I went to community college my senior year of high school, just took 3 math classes, and then went to university. So that's where we're at.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. How was the whole homeschooling experience? I mean, I know in a relative sense you don't have much to compare it to, but what was the experience for you?
I loved it. I really did. I have an older brother of 3 years. He's 3 years older than me. And he didn't like being homeschooled. He's much more social than I am, 'cause to have a lot of friends and acquaintances and people around him all the time. And he's very much an extrovert and I'm very much an introvert. I loved being homeschooled. And my parents homeschooled my brother and I for 2 different reasons. My mom homeschooled us because she didn't have a very good experience in the public school life. And so she just kept thinking to herself when she had kids, I can't imagine putting them on a bus and sending them to school.
Sure.
And she really didn't, this kind of sounds like creepy or weird, or like, I don't know, when you say it, I guess parents might get it, you know, but like, she didn't want other people to have our time. Like, she wanted to spend time with us when we were little.
Okay.
And then my dad was like, well, I want my kids to be done with school at 10 a.m. so I can go take them to do fun things. So they kind of came to that conclusion together that it would just be the best for our family. And it really was. It worked out super, super well. And, you know, I get not everyone can do it, and it doesn't work for everyone, and it doesn't work for every kid, and it doesn't work for every family, and I totally understand that. But for ours, it did. It worked really, really well.
Interesting.
My mom was a flight attendant. My dad drove truck. And so he was local only. So, at any given time, at least one of my parents were home, if not both. And then my mom, quit the airline industry for a couple years and then, 4 years. And then, during that time, she was a real estate agent. So her schedule was really flexible. And so it just worked out. It was just awesome. And it was really fun. Like I said, like the whole reason that my dad had us homeschooled was because he wanted us to be done with, you know, done with school by 10 a.m. so we can go do fun things. And that's literally what we did. It was like, we got up at 7. We did, 2 to 3 hours of school. We were done for the day. And then, we would go dirt biking or horseback riding or snowboarding or, you know, go on a road trip or something. And it just gave us so much freedom, and it was really awesome. And it was weirdly enough, like, even though I only did 2 hours of school a day, I with homeschooling, you just have complete freedom at whatever pace you're going to go at.
Sure.
So it's like, it's not like I'm waiting on someone. I'm not waiting on the kid sitting behind me because he doesn't get it. You know, like, I can move on at whatever pace I wanted to. And I did two to three grades every year.
Wow.
So I technically had enough high school credits to graduate high school in eighth grade.
No kidding.
So it just was awesome. And it was one of the best experiences to set me up for success in college, because I would say at least half the time in college, you have a professor that isn't necessarily effective.
Yeah.
And it could be personal reasons. You just don't vibe with them. It could be that they just don't know what they're doing, you know, whatever
sure.
the reason is. And so with homeschooling, the way that we did it, we didn't do any online thing. My mom would ask us at the beginning of the year, what are you interested in? We would order textbooks and we would sit down, read the book. We'd be quizzed and tested on it. And that's what you have to do in college for pretty much every single topic that you go over. But when you have an effective teacher, it just makes it that much easier to do that. And so, but it was just awesome, because I got to college and I was looking at all these other kids in public school who had, and to no fault of their own, but had their hand held, you know, the whole time. And then they said, wait, I'm supposed to actually read and learn from this textbook. And I was like miles ahead, because I was like, this is what I've done. You know, I sat down and taught myself marine biology. Yes, I can teach myself bio 101, you know. It was awesome. I loved it. Looking back, it was such an incredible experience to spend that time with my parents, because it's not like I was in a building I didn't want to be in 8 hours a day, you know? And it was awesome. I wish I could have done it through college. And I know that's probably sounds really weird, but, it's just cool.
It sounds like this was a really positive experience for you, and it really set you up for good success in college. And I know just from things that you've posted up in Slack that you were very successful in college.
It is so circumstantial on the person and the parents and the curriculum and, you know, there are absolutely 100% the stereotypical homeschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
There are the homeschoolers who are very sheltered and don't get out in the world, and they don't interact with the world. They don't know how to move within it. You know, they don't really meet people. They don't have very good social skills. Their parents do everything for them. You know, there are 100% those people. But I would say it just shocked me when I went to college, you know, and I'm talking to people who just moved into the residence hall, and they were like, yeah, I'm here on a full ride scholarship that my mom wrote. And I was and my eyes about popped out of my head, because that would never happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was guaranteed, you know, if my mom wrote the scholarship letter, I would get the scholarship. She would still not do it, you know?
Sure.
So it's totally circumstantial. I really liked being homeschooled. It was, And my parents, you know, we did homeschool co-ops. We technically took classes, I guess. Not really, because it was like homeschool classes with, you know, one of the moms teaching us British literature. So, but, you know, you sat in a room with five people and you talked about it.
That also plays to the strengths and the interests of the other parents that were part of the co-op, too. So,
right.
If you had a parent who had a lot of interest or a lot of background in a certain topic, then, you know, them having interest makes it more passionate and hopefully can drive more interest in you guys as students.
Yeah, yeah. And the majority of the people who, you know, you make friends with homeschoolers when you're homeschooled because mm-hmm. you're all done with school at 11 a.m., you know, and so you can't hit up your public school friends because they're still in school.
Sure.
But my parents did not, they were not like, oh, a public schooler. Like my brother and I both had jobs by the time we were 14.
Mm-hmm.
We had tons of friends who were in public school. I did 4-H. My brother did Boy Scouts. You know, we just definitely, my parents got us out in the world. They taught us how to interact, you know? So I don't know. I really wish I wasn't kind of an exception. You know, I really wish this was more normal and people would have more of kind of an idea of, okay, this is what a homeschooler could look like. You know what I
sure,
mean? But
sure.
I totally get it because I grew up with some of those people, you know, there are still some people who I grew up with that are 25, 26, have never had a job, never moved out of their parents' house, don't know how to socialize, don't do anything, you know, and it's sad to me, but so I totally get it, you know. I mean, like, I'm not trying to be super defensive and say that doesn't happen, you know?
Sure.
But, yeah, and people are usually really surprised when they find out I was homeschooled because they're like, and literally my favorite thing is where they're like, but how do you know how to talk to people? You know, I was fed through a tube in a closet, you know, I don't know. Drives me crazy, but yeah, so that's where we're at.
No, that's cool. Well, and I have to imagine, I mean, while you say, hey, look, you know, we only did 2 or 3 hours worth of schoolwork every day. And then after that, we went out and, quote, had fun. But I'm sure that there's also, in that having fun, there were life lessons to be learned, too. So it sounds that, like, this dedication that your parents had to the homeschooling that I'm sure they probably integrated in some real life things into this. So if you're going dirt biking, hey, well, you know, if something breaks, they're going to help you and teach you how to fix it.
Right.
And, you know,
yeah,
that kind
like
of stuff.
My,
so
my dad's totally a mechanic and he totally mm-hmm. is wired like that. And he, you know, he is 55 and he goes dirt biking at least once a week, you know, and he's,
yeah.
and he has a truck he's had since he was 16 and worked on, and he helps my brother with his Camaro, you know, so it's like auto mechanics was a class we took, you know, as far as my high school records are concerned, I took auto mechanics for 2 years because that's what we were doing. You know, we were out in the shop. Why would I not get credit for that? You know, I was learning how to do an oil change. I was learning how to, you know, tune a carburetor. I should get credit for that. That is a real life skill, you know.
Absolutely.
What I mean? So, and it was just cool because it's like, you're homeschooled, you go with your parents and they go to, you know, we bought property and built a house. So when I was 7 or 8 and 9, I learned the process of how to build a house, you know?
Yeah.
And when we got bored, my dad has his degree in forestry. You know, he taught us trig when we were 12.
Wow.
So it's like, it's
nice.
Just, yeah, it's awesome. You know, and people always ask me, they're like, if you have kids, can you imagine, you know, are you going to put them in public school? No, I can't. I can't imagine that because I had such a good experience and I had so much, it was just awesome to me that, like, I want to have that, you know, with my kids if I ever decide to reproduce, you know, so.
If you ever decide to reproduce.
I don't want kids, but, you know, if it. You know, if I get struck by lightning and I realize that life is really short and I should put my mark on the world, then, you know,
that's all right. Hey, it's not a decision you have to make right now. So that's
so
fine.
True.
So what interested you as a kid growing up?
Well, I was really interested in horses. And I was really interested in reading. And so, that and then that came together where all I did was read horse books for years.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided from a very young age that I wanted a horse really badly. And my parents always had the philosophy of they're never going to just give us something outside mm-hmm. of what we need to survive, essentially.
Sure.
And so, what my parents made an agreement that if I could, buy my horse and have enough money to support it and sustain it, then, I could get a horse. And so, I saved and I literally saved from when I was like five, from when I could understand the concept of money, I saved it.
Nice.
And so by the time I was 12, I had over $1,700 saved for a horse. Because that is just what I knew, you know, I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do. And I had been taking lessons, for 4 years at that point by the time I was 12. So we found a really amazing riding instructor who I'm still great friends with and love and adore. And so I started with lessons right when we moved, to Emmett. So I was eight and, so I saved and I saved and I saved and we actually went out to look at a horse in Parma or something. I don't even remember. We were driving back and I was really discouraged and tired and not happy because that horse kind of turned out to not be what we were looking for. And so we were driving and we saw a feed store and we thought, okay, let's pull in, and see, you know, if there's anything posted on the bulletin boards or anything. Mm-hmm. And we, talked to the manager and we just said, hey, like, we're just looking kind of for a kid's horse. At that point, I was mildly experienced. And the manager said, well, actually, my husband and I decided that we're going to be selling our, gray Morab gelding, last night. Funny that you asked, and he'd be a great kid's horse. And so the next week we, went up to Horseshoe Bend, which is where they're from, and we took a look at him and I rode him and fell in love. He was amazing. And then, and my birthday was the next week. So I was like, I'm gonna buy me the best birthday present ever. You know, like, I was so excited. The bummer was that I only had $1,700. They were asking $2,000 for him. Mm-hmm. And so even if they took the $1,700, I'd have no money, you know, for a saddle, for hay or anything. And so my mom, you know, my birthday was in a week. My mom was like, Joelle, just, he's not the horse. It's okay. We'll find one when you have the money. It's okay. And I was just a wreck. I swear. I cried.
I bet.
Every day for that week. And it was just awful because I was like, I knew. I was like, that's my horse. That is my horse. I just knew. And so the day of my 12th birthday, my dad said, you know, we're in Idaho. Let's remember. So my dad says, hey, let's go shooting at the range. And mm-hmm. so we grab everything and we head up to the range and we get out and my dad says, oh, we forgot the shooting glasses. And I was like, Dad, like, come on, we'll just shoot without it. It's nobody. He's like, no, we have to have eye protection. You know, that's my dad for you. And so, we head back and tied to our fence with a gigantic blue bow on his head was Aww. Diablo, the horse I had ridden the week before. And I cried and everyone cried and it was great. And Jennifer That's was there, awesome. My riding instructor. It was awesome. But, so he was my 12th birthday present and, it's been awesome. But so pretty much all that interests me as a child with horses. And that is kind of what I was trying to get at is like, I lived and breathed horses. I would get as many horse magazines as I could and cut out the pictures of them and put them all over my wall. Like I looked like a sorority girl dorm because I had just my entire wall was plastered with magazines about horses. Mm-hmm. I wrote essays on them. I drew pictures of them. I, would ride any horse that anyone would let me. So I did 4-H. I did presentations on them. It was like my life. It's all I could think about.
Did you compete at all?
Yeah, I showed 4-H locally, and then that took me to a state show that I won, which was pretty cool. I won some all-around stuff and some all-around buckles and horsemanship, showmanship, trail, slow stuff, like nothing like barrel racing or rodeo or anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't mean to sound super like puffed up or conceited, but like I'm a good rider, you know. I just and that is what 9 years of riding or no, more than that. 13 years. Just about 13 years of riding, you know, will do and when I was in 4-H in junior high and high school, you know, I was riding 500 hours in 8 months. So you know, wow. I was living on my horse. And so you get to be pretty good when you do that. So,
I bet.
Yeah, so it was awesome, and it was super great to show, and it was awesome because I was really at a point of prime, if you will, and Diablo was at a point of prime, if you will, because he was about, you know, 12, 13, 14, and he was really just awesome. He was in really great shape, you know, and then I kind of had to make a decision when I decided to go to college. I actually think about this a lot now because I, you know, my college career is coming to an end. I have four more classes, you know, that's it. And, so I was going to go to the University of Idaho, which is, excuse me, about 6 hours north of Boise. And it's up in Moscow, and it's a really nice college. They have a really great, they have really awesome business and law programs, and they are research based and really cool. Very agricultural. Every ag uh-huh. kid that goes to school, every kid that's interested in agriculture and horses and generally is in 4-H will go to the University of Idaho because 4-H is like sanctioned, sponsored, whatever, by the University of Idaho.
Oh, cool.
So I was planning on going there. My brother was going there. My brother was already up there. It was great. He was in a fraternity. I was going to be in a sorority. And I had this all planned out. I applied, all this other stuff. And I went up and I toured it. And I turned to my mom and I said, I don't want to go here. And she said, well, okay. You know, cause my parents were never going to make me do anything I didn't want to do. And she said, well, just sit on it. You know, college is scary. You're a senior in high school. You're really stressed out. You know, you're trying to finish your last year of 4-H, all this good stuff. And so we came home, and then it was like 2 months later. Cause I think we toured it, April. Okay, maybe it was April my junior year, and then my mom said, and then I kept saying, I was like, oh man, I don't know, and my mom, and I had scholarships to go up there and all this good stuff, and so my mom kind of had some money invested into it at this point, you know, and so she was like, well, let's just go tour it again, let's just go see what you think, you know, and go up for your orientation and all this fun stuff. So I went up there, and I came back with the same thing. I was like, I don't want to go to college here, like, this is not what I need to do. And it was so heartbreaking to me because I, like, this was my plan, right? Like, I was gonna go to U of I. I was, you know, this was like my life, and I had just been banking on this since I was in junior high.
Sure.
So at this point, I'm finishing my senior year, and I'm like, I'm not going to school there. I had no idea what I was gonna do. I had registered for classes, I had scholarships, I had sororities picked out that I wanted to join. My brother was up there. So I always kind of had that feeling, and then I just reached a moment of panic, and I was like, I have to go, because if I don't, what else am I going to do? I'm a senior. I'm too late to apply to anything else. And then my parents and I sat down that summer in about June before I was supposed to go to U of I, and we found out it was going to be more than double my tuition to bring Diablo up there with me. Oof. And there was no feasible way I could pay for that. You know, maybe if I was working full time, but I was going to be a full time college student.
Right.
And so I looked across the table. I'll never forget this. I just looked at my parents and said, I'm not going. And they said, then what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. So 20 minutes later, I withdrew from the University of Idaho. I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. I had no college picked out. I was like, I guess I'm going to go to community college, you know, whatever. So I throw a Hail Mary and I apply to Boise State a week later, which is now less than a week before classes start.
Sure.
less than a month before classes start. I get this acceptance letter. It was like mad dash. There was one orientation left. I make the orientation. I somehow got placed in a really cool place to live on campus my first year. And so it was just insane. It was absolutely insane. And I think about it now, and I, you know, my first about two and a quarter years of college, I lived on campus, whether it was as a resident or as housing staff. And thinking to where now, where I live at home, and my horse is, I'm literally looking at him right now out of my window. I have the opportunity to be with him and to spend time with him. He's now old, you know, like I pretty much missed 3 years is what it comes down to. And so thinking back now, I wish I wouldn't have been so scared of college. You know, like
I
wish I would have taken the opportunity to become more acquainted with colleges that were horse friendly, or try to get on an equestrian team, you know, or something like that, just so I could have an excuse to ride my horse. But I don't know. I'm so thankful, and I'm so blessed, and I'm so happy where I'm at right now. Like, I'm not unhappy, you know, but you always think about that. You always think about, like, what if I had made that other decision, you know?
Absolutely.
What if I had gone at UCLA, you know? I just, like, this is crazy to me. And it, like, when I made the decision to go to Boise State, I was like, I'm never, ever going to regret this, because this is what I, like, had to do. You know, I was kind of, like, backed in a corner, and now I'm like, come on, Joel, you shouldn't have been so scared. Why was college so scary to you? And it was. I don't know. It was crazy.
Yeah, you know, I think everyone gets at least intimidated by the college experience when they first start it, or just as they're going to start it. You know, obviously, just like anything else that's new, I think a lot of people end up warming up to it, and they get to be comfortable with it. But it can be a pretty drastic change. You know, whether you're, even if you're staying at home or going away. I mean, my first 2 years of college, I went to community college and I was able to stay at home. But I, you know, went to school full time and worked full time. And, that's when I got into the fire service. So I was doing all my fire and EMS training then. So it was like crazy. I think I slept like 3 hours a night. I have no idea how I got through it, but you know, that's a very challenging thing. You know, and then even after that, I went away then for my second 2 years of school, and that was then a different experience. So, you know, I think everyone goes through it. Everyone who goes to college goes through it in some way, shape, or form. It's their own personal experience, and it's that detachment of getting away from home. Some people really want to do it. Some people are good with it, but they have a little reluctance, kind of like you did with particularly with your horse. As that seemed to be your closest relationship. Other people are just terrified to leave home. It's like, who's going to do my laundry kind of stuff. Right. You know, which seems a little crazy, but you know, everyone has their own experiences. So it's interesting. It's interesting. Yeah. So so you're almost done with school.
Almost.
What is your major?
Studying marketing. I love it. Live and breathe it. When I was a freshman, I was placed when I started Boise State, I was a communications major, because when I was supposed to go to University of Idaho, I was going to study journalism and mass media. They have a really great program for that.
Okay.
So I decided to go to Boise State. The closest thing was communications degree. So I chose communications. The place that I was placed to live in as a freshman was technically a floor for business majors. And so it was all freshman business majors. It's a program called the Living Learning Communities. They're amazing. Changed my life. Loved it so much. You actually have a faculty from the college that lives on your floor. You have a traditional RA. You have a PA, which is actually what I did when I worked for housing residents. So a PA is a program assistant. And so they, are there as more of like a, not a fun maker, but they are just there to make sure that, you know, students are getting the support that they need academically. And cool. So, yeah, it was really cool. I loved it. But the, you know, I was living there and I wasn't a business major. And so all of the students that live on that floor, first year freshmen, they have to take General Business 101, which is a little bit different, because usually sophomores to sometimes seniors, take that class. It's kind of not common for freshmen to be in there. So the whole floor had to take it. I took it, and when I was a freshman, I was in a very much different mindset than I am now. And so I was very, 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 very devoted to school, because I was like, you know, I feel like I made a mistake. I feel like I should be at U of I. I feel like I should be with my horse, you know, so I really dove into the books. And so, and I never partied or anything like that. And so I spent a lot of time on school, and my grades showed. And so I finished that year with a 4.0. But I took the general business class my fall semester. About 3 weeks into my spring semester that year, I get an email from the General Business 101 professor that says, just so you know, I've given your contact information to a marketing firm downtown. And at that point, I had changed my major from communications to marketing, because I realized that I wanted to make a living in, you know, at the end of everything. And that I was interested in marketing. So I was a marketing major according to school at that point. So I get this email, hey, we've passed your information along to a marketing firm. And me, you know, how old was I? Barely 19, you know, me is like, well, what the heck? You know, I don't know anything. So they say you need to contact this person if you're interested. Just know that your information is passed along. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take a job, you know, cool. I'm thinking I have no idea what I'm getting into. So I get a hold of the lady. I tell her, you know, hey, I'm interested in this position. I don't know what's going on. I did some research online. I didn't really find a whole lot. Like I found their website. I looked through some of their work, but you know, me not knowing anything, I didn't know how to read anything or what, you know, everything meant. So I go for this interview and, I said, yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing here. You know, like I tried to keep it positive, but I was like, oh, I'm a freshman. I don't know anything.
You sure. Know,
if you're, she's like, I know. I asked that professor for her, for out of her, the year before and the year I took that class, she asked for students. So it's 350 students in that class. And so 700 names. She said, I asked for the top five and you were number one. Wow. And I was like, nice. All right, well, thank you. And so, at the end of the interview, she said, I feel good about this. So I'm going to go back and talk to the president of the company and I'll let you know. And I said, great. And then 2 days later, I was an employee of CLM Marketing and Advertising. And I've been there ever since. And so I love it. I am a media coordinator and a social media coordinator. So I work, on the quantitative side of marketing. So not so much creative, even though I am a creative person, but I work with spreadsheets and papers and invoices and notarized scripts and all that good stuff. So I help in the planning and placement of ads and, moving a little bit more into social media and kind of a little bit more strategy concerning that. But, it's just an adventure because I literally have no, like besides school and CLM, I have no other scope of marketing. And so, you know, I've been kind of formed how they've wanted me to be.
Sure.
And so it's just been awesome because it's like, you know, I can go to them and say, I don't know what I'm doing. And they can't say, well, you should, you know, cause they, right. They're the ones who have trained me. So, yeah, but I love it. It's been awesome.
So this kind of start as like an internship and really turn into a job kind of thing?
Actually, it didn't. It started out as a part-time employee. They needed someone doing somewhat marketing-ish things, but more clerical paperwork, you know, until recently.
sure. But they wanted someone who was at least interested in marketing and who knew the general concepts.
Yeah. And they were looking for someone who, I guess they could see longevity in, you know,
sure.
Because the idea is that if you hire a freshman or a sophomore, you will hire them after graduation. You know, that's the whole idea is that they grow and move within the company. And then when they graduate, they're ready to, they know the businesses, you know, and that's something I've learned really that it's so, so critically important to understand the client. Because every client's different and you can read as many books and click on as many, you know, top five secrets to get people on your website, you know, as many pages as you
horrible.
Want to. I know you can read those until your eyes bleed. But, what it comes down to is that you're providing a service and mm-hmm. you provide services differently to everyone.
Yes.
And so it's so critically important to understand the client's business because if you don't understand how their business works, you're not going to understand how you can help them. You know, I mean, what one of our clients is the Idaho Lottery. Okay, that is a very unique business. You know,
sure.
I can't go on LinkedIn and find the top 10 ways to, you know, get the best radio placement and do it. You know, and apply that to the lottery. You have to understand how the lottery works and how, you know, we do research on tickets, you know, how the tickets are made, you know, and stuff like that. Everything like that. You just have to be so thorough with understanding that. And I wouldn't have that scope. And I've thought about this a lot and I've talked to a lot of people, but when you are getting a marketing, when you're getting educated in marketing, it's all theoretical. It's so theoretical. It's the four P's, and it's every single freaking acronym you can think of.
Yep.
And you're assuming the consumer's irrational. So then it's super fun to take econ classes when they're like, the consumer's rational, and you just have to completely change your thinking, you know?
Right.
It's all theoretical. And then you get into the industry, and you don't know how to place an ad. You know, and you don't know how to talk to reps and how to, you know, how to read certain things to understand if you're getting value for this or, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. and it's just crazy to me. And so I'm so, so thankful that I have had CLM and had this opportunity, because it would all just be theory, you know, at this point. And so to have that technical skill, to have that real world experience, this has been awesome, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's applied learning, and that's a great thing. And sometimes it's applying it after you've learned it. Sometimes you are learning it and practically applying it, and then later on you learn the theory behind it. And so I'm sure you've had these moments either at work or in school where that light bulb goes off over your head, where you're thinking, hey, either I've done this or I learned about it, and now I'm right. making that connection as to, you know, basically answering the question of why we do this type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just been, it's been incredible. And it's, you know, it's also somewhat challenging to go to school, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because it's like I have 3 years of real world experience. I mean, even if I was pushing paper the first two, I had my ears open. You know, absolutely. I'm not stupid. I was listening.
Yeah. And you're still in that environment. And it's, dare I say, ignorant of someone to think that you would be working in that environment, even in a clerical position, and still not absorbing what was going on around you.
Right. Right. So, and the hardest thing is to get a professor who either A, has never worked in the field, or hasn't worked in the field like recently. And so it's like, okay, I'm out there, you know, mm-hmm. I'm in the industry grinding, and I come here and you try to tell me about something that's so outdated. It could never work. And then I look around and there's people taking notes, you know, and I'm like, oh, little fella, you have a big storm. And I feel so bad, you know, and I hear about all these graduates who are just drowning when they get hired. Yep. And it's like, well, it's no joke. You know, there's, it's no surprise that that's happening. It's because the education that we're getting is not current. You know, some of it is, and some of it's awesome. And I've had fantastic professors, but it's been almost challenging, and it was, mm-hmm. and it was really, really hard, I would say about one or two semesters ago, to not just throw in the towel and say, at this point, what good is a degree? No other professors have gained my respect immediately than when they walk into the classroom with a textbook, put it on a table and say, throw this out. This isn't the real world. There are things I'm going to teach you that don't actually will ever, 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 ever apply. So, mm-hmm. and they let us know. I've had professors say, you're never going to see this in the real world. This doesn't work.
Right.
And they still have to teach it because it's a learning objective, you know, or whatever.
So your last four courses, your last four classes, are you finishing these in the coming term and you'll be graduating?
Yeah. So I actually walk in December, which is super, super cool. I'm very Great. Excited for. They're going to be fun classes. You know, I really think this last year, so I feel like everyone said this and I didn't believe that this was going to happen to me, and then it did. Junior year is the worst.
It's hard.
So the worst.
Yeah.
So I have really awesome classes picked out this semester. I have really cool teachers. So I'm really excited for that. Mostly I'm just really excited to be done, you know, and to just really give CLM everything, you know, and to, you know, and they're amazing. I literally cannot talk enough about how much I just love working there, how much my bosses and my coworkers have done everything possible to just make my college and my work life experience amazing. You know, there are days where I call my boss and I say, I can't. And she goes, well, work it out, you know, and they don't pressure me or anything like that. So
sure.
I'm excited to not have to do that anymore. You know, I'm really excited to work. Yeah. But yeah, so it'll be awesome.
That's good. That's good. That's exciting. And it's nice to know that you're already working in the field, but you know, after you graduate, you don't have that big pressure of, oh my gosh, now I have to fill out 1,000 applications to get 3 interviews and hope that I get hired by one of them. You're already there. And I mean, at this point, your hope is that you'll be able to go full time and you'll be able to continue doing something good for them.
Yeah. And that was so terrifying because I had so many friends graduating this last year, you know, who walked in May and they were like, oh man, I don't have a job, you know, and they're literally like applying to Papa Murphy's. And I am just like, oh my Lord, I cannot imagine spending $30,000+ on an education and walk out without a job. It's real. It happens every day, sure. You know, but I was like, I just felt awful. It just was horrible. Yeah,
absolutely. So let's switch gears a bit.
Oh boy.
You are you're the co-host, or depending on who you ask, you're the primary host on the Chordcast, again, Random Chatter's music podcast.
Yeah.
So obviously you know a couple things about music. You might have a little bit of interest in music.
A little bit.
Where did this start? How did it start? Explain your progression through your interest in music.
All right. So I've always loved music. My parents are very, like none of my family plays an instrument, which is a little bit weird, but, my parents are very musical. We always had music playing in the house, whether it was classical or if, you know, my dad was in charge, it was, Led Zeppelin, you know, so
cool.
We always had tons of music playing all the time. And it was always just a big part of our family, not in the sense of we'd go to concerts, but it was just like, put on some tunes, you know?
Yep.
And so, I was raised on Led Zeppelin and Mozart and, Earth, Wind and Fire and Frank Sinatra, you know, so it's just a huge wide variety of things. So I was always interested in it. And then I, how old was I? 13 or 14. And I was about 14, and my brother took me to an orthodontist appointment because I had braces, and he played a song called Forget Your Heart by Silverstein in the car, and there was screaming and singing, and I was like, ew, this is crap, you know, and like, I was like, this is terrible, because I was at the time obsessed with Celtic women, you know, or whatever. And so I kind of was like really not interested in that at all, like that kind of music, and I was like, I'm never gonna listen to that crap, that's just yelling, you know, knock on prayer. If only I knew.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then we go on this hike to the Bruno Sand Dune. No, it wasn't Bruno, it was Craters of the Moon. And we go on this hike, and on the way there, one of my very 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 best friends, Daniel, was with us, and he said, hey, can we stop at Walmart? And we were like, Daniel, why do you want to go to Walmart? And he's like, because I just, I want to get this album that just came out. And it was an album called A Fever You Can't Sweat Out by Panic at the Disco. And so he bought it and we listened to it in the car and I was like, I love this. And I just like, and that's where it all started. It was like Panic at the Disco. And then it was, Fall Out Boy, and then All American Rejects, and mm-hmm. then it just kind of spiraled out of control, and then I got a Twitter, and then all I did was spend time on Twitter, and I found a band that is now very much not respected, or as they should not be, a band called Lost Prophets from England. They're actually from Wales, sorry. And they have now broken up over horrible, horrible proven allegations of their lead singer that we won't talk about, but it was awful. But that was really the band that I hit full fangirl obsession over, mm-hmm. which was very much not healthy. Anyways, so that was really like probably when I was like 14 or 15 is when it really took off. And then, I was really, just found a lot of comfort, you know, in music and found a lot of healing in music. And it was really, just an opportunity to express myself outside of words that I say or actions that I do, you know, and
sure.
It was awesome. And looking back, you know, these bands like Forever the Sickest Kids, it's just teeny bopper bands, you know, right. It's just like, it's exactly what would appeal to a 14, 15 year old girl. I think without that, you know, foundation, I wouldn't really be able to, I wouldn't have been excited about music as I as I had been. So I started going to shows, which was the first mistake. let me see. I think it was 2011 was my first show. It was May 27th, and it was a band called Forever the Sickest Kids. And I went with my very, very good friend Zoe, and then it was just completely spiraled out of control.
So since 2011, how many concerts have you been to?
I don't know. I used to keep track, and then it was like, I can't. Like, I literally could not keep up.
Give me a ballpark here. Give me a range.
I would say it's closer to 300 by now. Because wow. It was over 200 for a while. But, I mean, I would go to any show I could, whether it was bands I was super into, bands I had never heard of. And then when you add on top of it that I can fly for free because my mom works for an airline,
yep.
I wasn't just, secluded to Boise anymore. It was an opportunity to go, okay, I can go to Seattle. I can go to literally any tour I want to, as long as I had someone to go with. I cannot tell you the amount of people I have practically subpoenaed into going to shows with me. It was like, I already bought you a ticket. It was awful. I used the worst guilt trip methods ever. But
nice.
Yeah. So I just started traveling for shows. I started really finding what I was interested in, what I didn't like. And then you follow so many bands, literally, sometimes physically, and you go to so many shows and you meet so many people. You know, the music industry seems so wide and so spread out, and it's really not. You know, it's like, you meet a tour manager who's best friends with a tour manager of your favorite band, you know, or, or however that works out. Maybe small is not necessarily the correct word, but it's just such a huge network. You know, everyone knows everyone pretty much. So you spend so much time and you go to over 100 shows by the time you're 16, and you're bound to know people, you know, you start meeting people. And so that's kind of what happened. And, I was famous for a while, and I'm pretty sure this still, precedes me, but I, started baking cookies for bands because I noticed that a lot of them were homesick, you know, and they were like, I just miss home cooked food. Okay. I'm not going to make you a meal, but I'll make you cookies, you know?
Sure. And so cookies are portable.
Yeah, exactly. And one time I was on a flight up to go see my favorite band, which is now Silverstein. My brother knew. He knew. I didn't know. But Silverstein turned out to be my favorite band, even though I poo-pooed them at the very beginning.
Back in the day.
Yeah. And I had baskets and baskets of cookies because I was going to this tour. And I was flying up to Seattle, and the flight attendant asked me about it. She's like, what? He was like, what are you doing with all this? I was like, oh, well, okay, my favorite band. And I kind of explained it a little bit to him. And so when he read the, over the intercom, oh my gosh, I think I have it saved in my phone. He said something, and he's like, if you are a teenage girl traveling with cookies, please be sure that they are stowed safely under the seat in front of you. So it was just super cool.
That's great.
Yeah. And so it's, I don't know, like, so I met people, you know, essentially, and then I, you know, merch people and tour managers, and then I met I met bands, and then I became friends with band members. And because I'm not crazy, you know, I'm not trying to get in their tour bus. I'm not trying to get in their pants. I'm not trying to do anything like that. You know, I love music. And right. That's always what I was interested in. You know, that was always the root. It was never like, I want to meet you because you're famous, or I want to meet you because I want to get something from you. You know, it was always just like, I want to meet you because I really appreciate you as a musician. And
yeah.
So, I feel like a lot of really good, strong connections because I wasn't the typical normal crazy fangirl.
That's cool.
So
do you ever see any kind of future intersection between marketing and music?
You know, I wouldn't rule it out. You know, I definitely could see a future in it. Actually, what we just discussed on Chordcast, this Chordcast will probably come out before this, but we discussed, is the music industry oversaturated? And, I believe it is. I believe that it's really hard for bands to break through right now because social media has given everyone a platform to become a performer.
That sure.
Everyone has forgotten that we need audience members. And I just want to say that is something I love about podcasts, and I love about Slack, is because people who just listen are so important, and it's become almost a rare gift because, like I said, social media, everyone's performing. I don't care who you are. You can tell me that it's different, but everyone is trying to impress someone or themselves or their family members, you know, their coworker, whatever, that we have all become performers. I'm a performer. I do it. I'm not going to say I don't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we forgot to watch and we forgot to listen.
True.
And so that is why that's why I would say hesitantly, maybe, about marketing in the music industry, because I don't know if I have the patience to try to come up with a way to break through in the music industry, because it's oversaturated and there's so many performers and not enough listeners at this point.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Are you familiar with Blue Staley?
I'm not.
You know Clayton, though, right?
Did they do an interview?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so Clayton has an association with a band called Blue Staley. And we had the connection here is that on Echo Base for our 100th episode, which we recorded just a few days ago on Tuesday, we had a guest on there, which we interviewed, Heather Antos. She is an assistant editor for Marvel Comics. And among other titles, she oversees all the Star Wars titles. Mm-hmm. She, her college career was centered on drama, filmmaking, that kind of stuff. And she also has a great appreciation for music. I think very similar to a lot of yours and a lot of ours collectively.
Yeah.
And, she actually is in a video for Blue Staley, Ultranum. And you can look it up on YouTube. And so the funny thing was that Chris completely missed the episode. I think he was having too good of a time at trivia night, Tuesday night, completely missed the episode. And so when this discussion happened, it was, oh my gosh, I can't believe Chris missed this, because he would have loved to be here to talk about, you know, artists and bands that they mutually knew.
Right.
So yeah. So Chris missed out. So we should have just had you on.
Oh, would have loved it. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't play an instrument. I'm not in a band. I'm not a tour manager. I'm not a merch girl, you know, anything like that. I just, you spend time at over 300 shows or, you know, around 300 shows, and you pick up on some things.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you meet some cool people, you know, it's like, it's crazy. And I tend to try not to talk about it, 'cause I really, 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 really don't like name droppers. You know, and most of the time it's like, okay, it's a pretty specific industry, you know, or genre, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you don't know like the hardcore, or the rock genre, then if I say a name, you're going to be like, well, that's super cool, you know?
Right.
But,
right.
You know, so I tend to not talk about it, and because I don't want to sound like, oh yeah, I know the drummer for this band, you know. Yeah, it's just been super fun. It's awesome to have found something that I'm passionate about and spend some time in it, and I think that it was a great experience of spending some time around and in an industry and thinking, I don't really see a future in this, you know, whether it be a tour manager or an artist manager or anything like that, or working for a record label. It gave me the opportunity to see, okay, this isn't really something that I'm interested in as a career. You know, I'll always love music. I'll always go to shows, but, it was an awesome experience. And I love it. I'm so glad I'm still involved. You know, I'm going to Warped Tour in Denver. I'm so excited. It's gonna be cool. So much fun. Yeah.
What has been your best experience in terms of music and concerts and that kind of thing?
Do you mean like a best show or like a artist experience or?
Any of it. What's the thing that stands out to you the most that you think about, or you think, oh God, it'd be so great if that could happen again, or that would be so tough to top because it was just beyond awesome?
Yeah. All right. Well, this isn't super high energy, but one of my favorite bands is called the Amity Affliction. And they are very, they're fairly heavy. They're from Australia, and they, have a song. A lot of their songs are about, suicide and trying to hold on for literally hold on for dear life, you know, and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it tends to hit home with a lot of, adolescents and people mm-hmm. who are going through things like that, you know, and, they toured with Silverstein, which is kind of where I found out about them, and I really like their music. I think that, like, instrumentally, they're probably one of my favorite bands. Nah, that's a lie. Instrumentally, they are one of my favorite bands. I know that. So, and they have these really deep, raw lyrics that are just like, whoa, man, like, you know, it feels like you got hit by a freight train. And one of their songs is called Give It All. And the chorus goes, I give it all, and when I fall, I get up and I give some more until there's nothing left of me, just some bones stacked on the floor. It's kind of like this heavy meaning, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like a, packed with a punch. And most of their songs are like that. Well, they came to Boise, and I had seen them once before, and I was really excited because this was like a headlining show. They were at a really small venue, which is my favorite venue ever. It's called the Shredder, and it's amazing. I just love it. It's tiny, it's dark, it's creepy, it's weird. The ceiling is low, everything's black. It's just so much fun.
Sure.
Because you're in it. Wherever you are standing in the Shredder, you are actively participating in the show. It's just so much fun. So I was at the very front center barrier, you know, and every single song screaming along. The vocalist, he screams, his name's Joel. He kept giving me the mic, you know, and I was just like, this is my night. Like, this is it. Like, I was so excited, and it was such a good night. And then it got better. It kind of may sound like it may sound like it gets a little bit worse, but it was an incredibly emotional moment. So in the song, Give It All, that song, that chorus is playing, and then everything dies down on the track when you listen to it. Everything dies down, and they have a children's chorus sing that. And so during the song, I could see that Joel, the vocalist, was visibly upset. He was visibly crying. And I was like, wow, this, you know, you kind of almost don't think about that. Like, when someone sings something, maybe not all the time, but when someone sings something, you have to remember, you know, it affects them, you know?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I was like, I was kind of almost taken aback. I was like, wow, you know, you'd think that he'd be singing this song every night for 3 months, that he would not, you know, not really care anymore. Or he would be a little bit used to it, but he was just so, he was just shook, you know, and I could just tell. And so this part gets where everything dies down, and it's supposed to be this children's chorus, and they have the audience singing it. And I'm right up against the stage. There's no barrier. There's no separation. It's him and I, you know. And he and something about the Amity Affliction, they don't really physically interact with the crowd a lot. They don't get in the crowd. They don't, they tend to not really get too close to people because they're huge in Australia, and they're getting bigger in the U.S. One of their shows in Australia, that the crowd actually broke the barrier because there was so much pressure to get to the front. So they tend to not really get too close to people because people will grab them. It's really weird.
Sure.
So I'm right there, and he's right there, and he's standing in front of me. He's crying. I'm crying. We're both crying. He looks at me. I look at him. The audience is singing the beginning of this chorus. He kneels in front of me, puts his head in the crook of my neck, and just starts sobbing.
Oh.
And it was insane, right? Because I was like, this is one of my favorite vocalists singing one of my favorite songs. We're both crying, and like, he is literally relying on me right now, you know? And so I grabbed him, and he grabbed me, and like, and it was super weird because the crowd just moved back because it was not characteristic of something that the Amity Affliction would do, you know?
Yep.
And it was just this moment, and the music stopped, and the band didn't really know what to do, and he was just, and like, I was holding on to him, and he was holding on to me, and we were both crying, and it was just like, it was crazy.
That's a pretty intense moment.
Yeah. And it was just like one of those things where I was like, I walked away from that show and I was like, I'm going to remember that until I die.
Yeah.
You know, because even though they may be no one, you know, you don't know about him. The majority of the people in the U.S. don't know about him. It's just a band, you know, quote unquote, or whatever. But it was like that was like such a defining moment, you know.
Sure.
It was just so intense and so emotional and so like,
well, and it was meaningful and it was personal to you. It's not like, oh, this is a great concert and I was there with, you know, 4,000 of my best friends. This was directly between you and the performers. I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. That's a very intense emotional experience.
Yeah. And then the crazy part was 2 days later, they sent out a tweet that they're not performing that song again live.
Wow.
So, wow. Boise was either the last or the second to last city that that song had ever was ever going to be performed in. Hmm. So it was just like, wow, you know, as a 19-year-old, it was like, wow, you know, I can't imagine that very many people would have the opportunity to have a moment like that with someone that they so deeply admire, you know.
Absolutely.
So it was crazy. And I know, I'm sorry, that was like a drag, and now like we're all crying and it's horrible, but
no, that's outstanding. Yeah. I mean, that's actually a really great story.
Yeah, and it's so much fun because if I see them you know, live or anything like that, he always recognizes me and he always pats me on the head. It's the cutest thing. It's like, I'm a little puppy. It's just fun, you know?
Sure.
And I know some of their crew now, and their crew is just amazing. And so it's so cool. You know, it's just, I don't know. Music, man. It's like, it's something else, you know, and it's,
well,
I don't know. I don't know how to say it.
Well, but music is also a very personal thing. And, you know, before we started recording here, we talked a little bit about, you know, things like religion and politics and that kind of stuff and how personal those things are. But music is also a very personal thing to people. And we obviously all have our different interests in music, and we respond to music differently. We play different music based upon the mood that we currently have or the mood that we want to be in.
Right.
You know, it's a very unique and a very personal thing. So yeah, I can absolutely appreciate, I mean, just listening to you tell the story, I could tell kind of the ups and downs of the emotions that you were going through as you were kind of, you know, reimagining that for yourself. And, yeah, it makes it very real. It's very palpable.
Right. And and it's kind of hard, you know, and it was definitely something that I considered before I agreed to do a music podcast with Chris, because we did something before that resembled a music podcast. It was a complete disaster. But when he said, you know,
No, stop. Tell me about that.
Oh God. Do you not know?
Is this musician?
Musician. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I knew a little. Someone might have told me something about musician. I won't give up my source, Chris.
Okay. Chris, yeah. So what ended up actually happening was I straight up forced my way into that. Chris started it with two of his other friends.
Okay.
And he reached out to me. And this is actually kind of where Chris and I started talking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of where everything sprouted from. So Chris reached out to me and said, "Hey, I started a music podcast. You want to listen?" And I thought, no, but I want to be on it. And so I hit him up and I said, "Hey, Chris, like I, you know," and I probably said this, at least I thought it. I was like, "I have more experience in the music industry than you guys do collectively. You know, like, let me guide you young ones." It was horrible. I was a horrible person. I am a horrible person. So,
well, but this reflects back on your comment earlier that you've never actually listened to a podcast before. So that was the screw you. I'm not going to listen to that, but I will be in it.
Right. And so Chris and his two friends and I started this podcast, and it was okay. It was doomed to fail because it was explicitly a, rock and hard rock podcast. And so we didn't talk about anything else. And so you can really only talk about that so much, I feel like. And so, and then scheduling issues and kind of interpersonal problems. And so we kind of just threw in the towel and was like, mm-hmm. We're done.
I think it's challenging with something like music or really anything else. If you're just going to talk about a certain genre, your gamble is, hey, we're either going to get a really big following of people who like this particular genre, or we're not going to get enough of a following because we're not talking about enough, a broad enough topic.
Right. So, and I could tell after interactions with that Chris was kind of discouraged, and not because of like, oh, I'm a failure. You know, I don't think it was anything like that. I think that he really liked the idea of talking about music.
Mm-hmm.
So it was months. I don't even want to take a stab at how many months later, Chris reached out to me again, and you know, and we had been talking in between then. And so we're good friends at this point. And he said, "I kind of want to try this again, and I kind of want to try it again with you. and if all can go as planned, we'll be on a network. So we'll at least have somewhat of an audience that may be interested. And I said, well, that sounds promising, but I'm down, you know, mm-hmm. let's do it. So, yeah, so, that's where we started out with Cordcast.
Cool.
Yeah. Did I have a point? What were we talking about?
Well, this was basically, you actually very fortunately took what was going to be my next question, which was, what got you into podcasting? You mm-hmm. somehow telepathically knew that that's where I was going. And you said, and then you just started this discussion on music and podcasts. So it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect timing.
Great.
It was perfect timing.
It was all Chris. Chris, yeah. He threw us in, but it's been super fun being on Random Chatter because, it's, you know, they're not guaranteed listeners. That sounds bad, you know, but, it's just been fun to sit down for, you know, 7 hours. That's how long it takes us to record an episode.
Just about,
and just talk about music, which is something that Chris and I are both so interested in, you know, and that we have such different opinions on, and sometimes really similar, but mostly very different.
Yeah. Well, but I also like that both of you have a range of music interests. You know, you both talk about Sinatra, and I love Sinatra. You both will talk about metal, and I love metal. And so it's just this great thing that you can kind of go back and forth and touch on all these genres. And sometimes you'll talk about bands that I've never even heard of.
But we're good at that.
but that's okay, you know, because that's what kind of broadens our collective interests. And, you know, I like some of the new segments that you guys have brought on to talk about some different things and to mm-hmm. experience some different things. I think it's a fun show. I think you guys have very complimentary personalities for it. I've listened to it from the get-go, and I absolutely enjoy it.
Oh, thank you.
And you guys had me on the show once, which, yeah. you know, as you mentioned, the seven-hour thing, I think it was like, hey, Tim, come on for 15 minutes because we need you to do something. And you were like in the middle of recording, and I'm getting texts from you guys. And that 15 minutes turned into like an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was a riot. You guys are a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you. It's super fun to interact with and to do a podcast with Chris. Chris goes to shows, you know, he totally is in it and he totally, you know, loves concerts and loves that. And I love concerts and I love that, you know, but Chris has such a long-term appreciation for mm-hmm. music. And he is a collector, you know, he has those vinyl he sees music as like a piece of art that will live on forever, you know, he comes from a collector standpoint, not trying to devalue or anything his experience of, you know, live music or anything like that. Like it's not that that cancels out anything. It's that he comes from it as a collector and as someone who, I don't know if that's the right word, but just someone who just has such a deep appreciation, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I'm in here like a train wreck where I'm like, yeah, I went to the show, and it was great, you know? And then I move on and then I'm at the next show and I'm at the next concert and I'm seeing the next band, you know? And then we just have such different, we look at music so differently, but we look at music similarly. So it's very strange and it's just been awesome because it's made me appreciate it. You know, it's made me try to look at music through a little bit of a different lens because, like I said, I was a little bit of a wrecking ball at one point where I was just, you know, one show after the other, one band after the other. It didn't resonate with me, if you will. And with Chris, it does, you know, he can sit and he can absorb music and he just, you know, breathes it in and lives it and all this other stuff. And I'm just like, whoa, you know, so it's just been like, it's just been super cool. And I think I never listened to any of them because I'm terrified, but I think that translates in Cordcast, you know, that I'm a one man wrecking ball and Chris is there like, ah, yes. And then Sinatra's 14 disc greatest hits, you know, and I'm like, dude, this band screamed and it was dope, you know? So I don't know. It's fun. I love it. It's great.
Well, and from a listener perspective, that definitely comes out that you guys do have fun with it. And, my biggest challenge, and I really enjoy music. I can't say that I'm anywhere into it as the two of you are, yet I very much appreciate your enthusiasm. I have a difficult relationship with music because I kind of get stuck on what I like, and it takes me a long time to find something else that I like.
Oof. Preach.
Yeah, and I'll listen to things. I'll listen to all sorts of things, and sometimes I'll have a tough time getting through a song. You know, if the first 20 seconds of the song don't do it for me, nope, I'm done. I'm out. Right. I won't invest my time in it. And oftentimes that'll kill me for an entire album, which I know shouldn't be the case. I should at least sample the whole album. But yeah, sometimes I'll just say, one song. Okay. So all 13 songs are crap to me. I don't want them. I don't like them. So I really do have a hard time getting into new music, and by new, I mean either current or just something that I haven't listened to before. That's a big challenge for me, but that's another thing that I appreciate about Chordcast is that you guys, again, you talk about bands or music that either I haven't heard of or at least haven't heard of much. And so as I listen, if I have the opportunity, I'll, you know, take a note of, oh, hey, I gotta, you know, check out this band. Check out this song and go back to it. So I like the stuff that you guys talk about. And, you know, there are some things that I have definitely gone back to.
That's awesome. That's what we love. We just want to, you know, we're not trying to change the world here. We just love talking about music, and we decided to talk about music publicly. And with that, we've just kind of discovered that people get stuck in a rut, you know, or mm-hmm. they get stuck in what they like. And, you know, I can say music has changed my life, and anyone can take that however they want to. But I would say that it's formed me as a person, and it's made me appreciate things I don't think I would have. It's made me do things I don't think I would have. But it's such an important part in my life, important part of my life. And I feel like Chris feels the same. And so, and people can either be ashamed about that and not talk about it, or people can not think of it like that, you know? So we just like providing a platform of like, you know, hey, get out there, listen to music, you know, see what it does for you.
So yeah, it's just absolutely
super fun.
No, hey, if you like something and it's healthy for you, embrace it and, you know, run with it.
Tacos.
Well, moderation, you know, too many tacos, probably not too good for you. You might have to go for something longer than a 7-minute run. So.
Oh, that's so true. What's your favorite? What's your favorite taco? Like a street taco, a hard shell taco, ground beef, steak, carne asada, pork, chicken?
Well, fish. I love fish tacos, and I'll tell you, I actually never had fish tacos until maybe 4 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Where were you?
I was working in New Jersey for a period of time on a certain assignment, and there was a place nearby that had them, and I kept hearing about them, and I got them, and I suddenly fell in love with them, and it's been pretty steady since then. And fortunately, there are at least a couple of places up around here where I live that have some pretty good ones, and I got my wife turned on to them. So very regularly it's a, hey, I'm really in the mood for fish tacos. Hey, yeah, me too. That's a good idea.
And that's brilliant.
Yeah, so fish tacos happen. But I mean, I mean, I'm certainly game with darn near any kind of taco. A couple nights ago, just had, you know, regular ground beef. So it's all good. It's all good. How about you? What's your favorite taco?
Carne asada, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love street tacos. I love me some good street tacos with cilantro and onion. Mm. And green sauce, that's like the best.
Yep. And that carne asada, if it has a little bit of a char on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need any other food. Like,
yeah.
You will be sustained and happy for the rest of your life.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, good stuff. I like street food. You know, I don't live in I live near a small metropolitan area, and they're just starting to get some food trucks around here. So I can kind of get that street food thing once in a while, or, you know, it's fun sometimes to go to, you know, New York City or DC or whatever, where there's of course a gazillion carts or trucks or whatever. And, you know, you find, I think sometimes some of the best food, in those places, and, you know, dirt cheap, you hand them a $5 bill and they hand you something that you can hardly finish.
Oh my gosh. I have learned to appreciate that if you think you're going to get food poisoning, it's probably going to be the best food.
Well, it's like
kind of a rule of thumb at this point.
Exactly. Sometimes the best pizza joints are the greasiest places out there.
My God, like you feel your arteries clogging while you eat them.
Oh, yeah.
I am 100% backing a food podcast on Random Chatter. Random Cheddar. That's what we have to call it. I don't know what else.
Random Cheddar. Yeah. Yeah. No, I could talk about food for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and Carrie's a freaking chef.
And Carrie, yeah.
And Derek just posts pictures of Subway anyways, so he's kind of a sandwich artist.
Well, see, I think we would have to expand beyond Subway. You have a certain propensity for accidental self-injury.
Oh, God.
Can we just dive just a couple minutes? I mean, again, we're going long here. But just let's take a quick little swim through that, shall we?
Okay.
Explain yourself.
Well, I don't know what to explain. Yeah, I have a lot of injuries.
Are you just a klutz? Is that what it really comes down to? I mean, not to put a label on a thing, but let's put a label on a thing. Are you a klutz, Joelle?
I'm not.
Uh-huh.
I've determined that. I've spent a lot of self-reflection in many hospital beds. I'm not a klutz. I'm reckless. And that doesn't mean that I'm fearless, because I'm scared of a lot of things. And a lot of the things that I do that I get myself hurt at, I was scared of, but I was like, nah, screw it, you know, and I do it anyways. So I'm like kind of reckless. So I'm not a klutz and I'm not fearless. I'm just reckless. I just kind of have no, I can see the consequences ahead and I have no regard for them. So yeah, I would say that my first injury happened when I was 3. And I fell off, actually it was probably before that. It's been determined that some point of infancy, I probably broke my collarbone at some point because, my right collarbone is, very much higher than my left. And so it's really uneven. And so,
it's like you have a Quasimodo thing going on.
No, I don't know what that means.
A Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, no, not quite. But and that's actually common. I didn't know that. It's common for people to break their jaw and not know. Because when you're a child, you just fall and you break your jaw and you can't say anything and you don't really know. And then it heals.
Hmm.
So collarbones and jaws are really common. So whenever that happened, that happened. And then when I was 3, I fell off a ladder and bit through my tongue and my lip. And I have a hole in my tongue from that.
Yeah. You've showed us that, and that's freaky. Yeah. And yeah, we need to talk about something else because that's just weird.
My favorite thing is to be out to dinner with friends who know about it, and I'll stick something through my tongue and just make direct, constant eye contact with the person across from me until they notice while I have, like, let's say, like, a piece of spaghetti sticking out of my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole table, Joelle, it's so much fun. It's really one of my that's how sad and pathetic my life is. That's one of the highlights of my day.
That's your circus trick, huh?
Yeah, it's my party trick. Everyone's like, oh, I can tie a cherry stem with my tongue. Well, I can put it through my tongue. You want to fight me? And then, I don't know, I got hurt a bunch when I was 8. And then when I was 12 was when my really big injury happened. I was jumping my horse and I fell off and hit my head on the jump standard and then hit my lower back on the poles and then I hit the ground. And it was about a 3-foot jump. So it was like a triple hit. If I hadn't had a helmet on, I would have died. And then, with my back injury, my hip bone separated.
Ooh.
From my body. So in my pelvic bone specifically, like it's all kind of a mess. And so my pelvic bone, my hip bone, on the left side goes up an inch and a half. No, sorry. On the right side goes up an inch and a half, and then on the left side it goes out an inch. So I'm put together there because of muscles and tendons that grew in order to let me walk because I didn't go to the hospital or anything. And I didn't.
Yeah, because why bother?
Stupidly, I didn't go to physical therapy or anything. And then about a year, almost exactly a year after the accident, I woke up and I couldn't walk. And so an ambulance came and took me to hospital, and they brought me to physical therapy. And the guy said, you shouldn't be able to walk. Like, your hip bones are not in your body. But my muscles and tendons and ligaments and all that fun stuff apparently have allowed me to walk. They hooked me up when I needed it. So, I did that when I was 12, and then it's just been a train wreck ever since. So broken ribs, I got knocked down by a horse and he literally jumped over me and landed on my hand and broke my hand. Oh. I have a really weird eardrum thing. I've ruptured both of my eardrums twice.
Concerts?
No. Sinus infections.
Oh.
And hands down, those are the most painful. When I think about the most painful pain I've ever endured, it's ruptured eardrums. I cannot describe how horrible it is. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. Hmm. I had a broken arm. Dislocated shoulder. I forgot. When I was 8, I was walking. We were building our house, and they had just put in the heating vents on the floor, and they didn't have a cover over them. So I went waltzing by, and I didn't think to look because I was 7, and I fell into the hole, and the sheet metal is just screwed in there with the screws facing in. And so, one of the screws grabbed my leg and cut my leg open.
Ouch.
And got the bone. Yeah, it was gnarly. And so
yeah,
I got
11
stitches for that. I really don't know what it is. I just think that I am just reckless and I'm just like, well, this could kill me. I'm going to do it, you know, or whatever. Or I just find myself in a situation where it's like, I'm going to get hurt, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I do get hurt a lot and I do really stupid stuff a lot. And it's like just really ridiculous, ridiculous, awful stuff.
Hmm.
And it's weird because no one else in my family's like that. So it's not genetic. My brother's not like that. My mom's not like that. My dad's not like that. You know, I just have managed to hurt every single part of my body pretty much. And that's another reason to donate to Patreon, because you get access to the Slack channel and then you get access to all of my injuries that I post about all the time. So
it's true.
Fun.
It's true. And not only does she tell us about them, she often posts pictures.
Yeah.
So yeah, good
times.
Yeah,
like when I separated my tendon or something on my hand.
Yep.
That was super fun.
Yep.
That was not a good time. That was gnarly too.
Yeah. We get pictures, we get stories. It's good. It's good. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
But I think with personal injuries, I think that's where we're going to wrap up our interview with Joelle.
That's all that anyone would ever need to know about me.
Pretty much.
And horses and marketing and injuries.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we definitely covered like all the major topics here.
Yeah, yeah. And if, you know, I'm online and I'm on the interwebs and I'm on Slack. And so if anyone has any additional questions or comments or whatever, you know where to find me.
Well, tell our listeners, tell people where they can find you, please.
Earth, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Aside from your address, we don't need like stalker issues or anything like that, but like, you know, Twitter and Instagram and such.
And my social security number. So my Instagram and my Snapchat and my Twitter are all the same. It's the letter X and then Joelle, Joelle, May with an E, Mae. So you can find me there. Or you can find Chris's profile, and somewhere I'm sure he has retweeted some sort of horrible comment that I've said to him on the internet, and my profile will be there. So
very
special
good.
Like that.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Talking about all this stuff, I hope I wasn't too crazy. I felt like it kept it low, you know? I don't know.
No, it was perfect. It truly was perfect. This is where I hope the discussion would go. And it did. It was great. Like I said, you and I had this telepathic thing happening tonight. It was a pleasure having you. And I look forward to getting this episode up. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will love to hear more about you.
Oh, boy. I hope so.
Absolutely. Thanks, Joelle.
Bye-bye.
I
hope you enjoyed our third episode of Random Chatter Interviews featuring Joelle Alexander. Be sure to catch her on the Chordcast and look out for her upcoming appearance on Echo Base. You can also follow her on Twitter and Instagram at xjoellemay, spelled M-A-E. You can find the Random Chatter Network online at randomchatter.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork, and on Twitter at randomchatter. Send emails to, you guessed it, randomchatter@randomchatter.com. You can find me, Qui-Gon Tim, on Twitter at Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's. If you like what we're doing here at Random Chatter, be sure to spread the word. Tell your friends and leave us reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. We also appreciate some financial support to help us keep vomiting quality content all over you. Visit patreon.com/randomchatter to show us some love. Even $1 a month gets you access to our Slack channel, where you can hang out all day every day with hosts, staff, and other fans. The music featured on Random Chatter Interviews is Kaboom by I Fight Dragons. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned on the Random Chatter feed for more Random Chatter Interviews coming at you all summer long.